Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to this afternoon's study session from May City Council for Monday, April 1st, 2013. And Councilmember Glover hanging around here somewhere? Okay, all right. Steph's there. The first item on the agenda is to review the agenda for tonight's regular council meeting. Page 2, items 2 through 4A. Items 4B through 4D. Items 4E through 4G. 4H through 4J. Slow down, okay. 4H through 4J. You're still waiting for it to show up, right? 4 Kilo through 4 Mike. 4 November through 4 Papa. So you know what we're talking about. 4 Quebec through 4 Sierra. He's rejoicing.
He speaks our language.
And the other ones are going, what is a Sierra? I don't understand that. 4 Tango through 7 Alpha. 4 Tango. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
This is a question on 6A.
Mike.
Just a question on 6A. I know I still have a variety of questions on this one, and I'm wondering if it would cause any big problem if we continued this to the next regular council meeting to give us some additional time to discuss issues in executive session.
That's okay. There any problems with that? Okay.
Thank you. 6A,
then we'll continue it to the April 15th meeting. Yeah, that would be it. Okay. 8 Alpha through 9 Bravo. 9 Charlie and 9 Delta. Okay. The next item is to hear a presentation on discussion by direction on modifications to the zoning ordinance. Mr. Sheffield.
Mayor, Council. About a year ago, we came to you with some housekeeping to the zoning code update. It seems kind of odd that we're talking about something that happened a couple of years ago, but we've had a chance to kind of do a shakedown cruise, so to speak, of our zoning code update, and we understand it a little bit better, and we'd like to come to you and see if we can make some modifications to make it work even better. The presentation that we have.
So what you're saying is that we sort of messed up the first time, now we're trying to fix it?
You bet.
Okay, no, I get what you're saying.
We're saying we're not perfect the first time.
Well, and joking aside, that was such a significant undertaking that it would shock me if there weren't things that as we go to implement them that we wouldn't have to come back and make some technical corrections or...
Sure.
Or see how they worked out. So we're not bothered, or I'm not bothered by the fact that we're sitting here talking about things we've learned and things we might need to change.
Sure. The first thing we'll talk about are some land use revisions. First thing is involves small recycling facilities in the downtown business district. We have one facility that's just off of Broadway, a little bit west of Center Street. It's a little over 1,000 square feet. When we initially set this program up, we thought that we would start this at 1,000 square feet. This facility came in with a building permit about 3,500 square feet. We'd like to increase the definition of small from 1,000 to 5,000. This is technically a violation. We'd like to amend the code so that we can go through a zoning process and complete what we think is a compatible use in that particular area. It's a technical definition change from 1,000 to 5,000 involving just the downtown area. Any thoughts about that?
Yes, Mayor. Councilmember Summers?
The question would be, why did we initially set it at 1,000? This is based on a specific case.
We set it
at 1,000 for a reason. Why?
It was the recommendation of the consultant when we were talking about that. The thought was is that these were initially the type of small facilities that might locate into a shopping center. Might take a small tenant space with an existing C2 zone at the time the C2, what we call the LC or limited commercial district now. The downtown area, it's a little bit different circumstance, especially in the downtown business 2 district, because you have a district that is kind of transitional between commercial uses and industrial uses. And so from that standpoint, we really don't have the same activity or the same opportunity for activity in these downtown areas that you would outside of that area. That's why the definition would be limited just the downtown areas.
Okay. And how did you come to 5,000 square foot?
Basically to accommodate this particular activity, to be honest.
All right.
Question?
Yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
We can't disapprove that or do a variance on that because of float? Because, you know, is there a concern that we might be overtaken by 5,000 square foot recycling centers in downtown?
State law prevents what are referred to as use variances.
Okay.
And so you have to define the use the correct way and then provide opportunity for it. So it's not eligible for variance.
Do you see that as being an issue? Like, if now they can go to 5,000 square feet, are they going to take up precious business district downtown development area?
This is primarily dealing with the DB2 district, which is that area along Broadway, so I don't think it will necessarily affect the downtown core or the downtown business district 1.
Okay. Thanks.
Next is community gardens in the downtown core. Right now, this is the Mesa Urban Garden is operating under a zoning administrator interpretation. We'd like to go ahead and make the change to the code to make it permanent. The idea basically is to authorize this with a temporary use permit for the ground level areas, but go ahead and encourage green roof and infrastructure development that way and offer authorized community gardens on roofs as a by right use. Any thoughts, discussions? The second has to do with RVs.
Yeah, Councilman Richards.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. This one, actually, I'd like to talk about a little bit more, you know, outside of this meeting to kind of think through this, because one of the problems with temporary use permit, one of the problems with community gardens is you develop a community garden, you have a bunch of community buy-in, people invest a lot of sweat, blood, sweat, and tears in their community garden plot. The area begins a urban revitalization, partly based on the success of the community garden, and then the developer of the property, particularly if it's the city, wants to then to develop that, and the community garden goes away and it's replaced with a more permanent use, which are all good things. But in the case of the city owning the property, I'd like us to consider including, if we're going to develop a community garden, can we develop them on a permanent basis and include them in our parks system, and that it's a permanent community garden? So I think it's the word temporary use permit on private land that makes sense. On public land, on City of Mesa owned property, you know, as we develop these, we may want to say, hey, this is going to be a community garden now, and it's going to be a community garden forever, and at that point, you transfer that over to the park system, and it becomes open space or that kind of designation instead of, you know, so I think there needs to be a little bit of caveat with how we characterize this, depending on the underlying ownership.
The community garden concept in the zoning code update is allowed or permitted in every district but downtown core right now. So the other zoning districts already authorize community gardens either as a temporary use or as a permitted use.
I think maybe it's the way we do it on our property, on the City of Mesa owned property, I think is the rub. I think the private stuff, so you're just adding the temporary use in the downtown core.
Correct.
But I think maybe this is a good opportunity to talk about our policy about community gardens and how we're going to characterize that. Because the one that's just come in downtown, you know, it's great. A lot of infrastructure developed there. Is that going to be a community garden? Is that where Mesa's community garden is? Or are we looking at that as, is it still on the list for development sites? You know, so I'm curious as to, you know, what our policy is concerning that in the downtown core.
on our property going forward.
I'm sorry, are you asking me to then pull it from the housekeeping list and bring it back as a separate item from a zoning standpoint?
Yeah, I guess my question is, how does that relate to zoning? Wouldn't that be as we as owners, we can decide at any time to pull that out and to request a rezone or whatever to make it a permanent green space.
Mayor, that's a good question.
We could do that at any time, regardless of what the zoning is. I mean, we own the property.
Right.
We can dedicate that as park space. We can do at any time, can't we?
Right. Mayor, Council, these items that Mr. Sheffield's talking about this evening are items that are going to go through a public hearing process. Yeah. Planning and Zoning Board come back to you. And so I think we can maybe be doing that process while we consider what Councilman Richens has talked about. Maybe this is kind of a separate item in terms of property ownership and how we want to handle it for city-owned property.
And can I get some clarification? Because I'm not aware of a permanent obligation for parks unless it was purchased by bond funds. And then all we do, if we wanted to swap that out,
we decide that. We just change that out for.
I mean, we had to do that on a federal encumbrance where we actually had to go find like property or similar value property. But I don't know of any obligation the city has, other than we would probably have to replace it. But not necessarily.
But once again,
that's not what I'm getting at all. No, when we designate a community garden on our property, we need to consider is this going to be park space from here on out? Is this going to be a community garden, or are we just doing this temporarily to help facilitate future development to happen on that? So it's a separate issue than the zoning.
Okay.
We'll have to talk about it another time.
Clarification on. But yeah. I need to understand from city attorney's office, even designating somebody a city park, what does that mean also? I mean, different than
it means everything
development.
Until you decide to change the use.
That's what I
meant. Then it means something else.
I want to make sure it's not being read into somehow designating
that create some in perpetuity right or protection.
Well, from a legal standpoint, no. As we found out with Riverview and things like that, from a political and a public policy standpoint, I think it does. And that really is what guides land use, is what we think is best for the city and what the citizens believe is best for their neighborhood and for the city. And it's the discussion that takes place then. And, you know, in places like Riverview, you come to an accommodation where you try to accomplish both. You maintain public space, you agree to replace athletic facilities, and then you change the use from a golf course to a spring training facility in Wrigleyville, and voila, you have a change in use that is a combination of both retaining parks and also changing something from one open space use to another type of open space use.
Yeah, well we could talk about the policy around that another time.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Next are RV storage lots in the LC district. What we found is that we've got several homeowners associations that no longer want to maintain their RV storage lots, and right now they're considered accessory uses in residential districts. We're having proposals come forward where they're taking the existing land use and they're wanting to make that available to the general public. So it's no longer accessory use to these homeowners associations, they're making them more commercial activities. What we'd like to do is, from a zoning standpoint and from a general standpoint, these activities, generally they're usually existing conditions. Go ahead and rezone those properties to the limited commercial district, LC. Do that with a special use permit, but also develop some standards so that we're not using prime commercial land for RV storage or essentially a dead use. So that's basically the proposal.
Okay.
Any thoughts? Yeah.
Councilman Richens?
Does this give them all the rights that come with a limited commercial property, or is it because it's under a special use permit that limited commercial rezone is going to be forever limited to, you know, is there anything keeping them from coming down later and saying, well, my zoning is limited commercial. I want to redevelop this as commercial space, and I have zoning by right to develop.
They may get certain entitlements that come with the limited commercial district, yes. But the special use permit could place restrictions on that. Depending, as long as they keep that activity up, there's also the possibility of a development agreement that might limit opportunities for other limited commercial uses if there's a concern that way, yes.
Can you better describe what instances they're an accessory use? Can you give a for example?
For example,
community
would be,
that has them as accessory use now.
Sunland Village, which is located between Greenfield and Higley, between Southern and Broadway, has an RV storage lot that's accessory, has been run by the Homeowners Association for years. They recently
sold. Who owns the underlying property, the Homeowners Association?
They did until recently. Then they sold that property to somebody else who wants to operate the RV storage. But in order to make his business work, he has to expand his market, which includes making his lot available to people who live outside of Sunland Village.
And maybe down the road he could come upon a situation that to continue to make that business work, he may need to develop part of that property.
Yes.
Within that development as limited commercial.
Sure, and that would modify a special use permit, which would mean it would go back to Board of Adjustment and probably have some site plan review issues as well. And so there would be public review of any modification of the site plan later on.
Sounds like a can of worms.
Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this whole special use permit, conditional use, you run into issues because the underlying zoning creates certain rights and privileges. And sometimes, as with this, those aren't really intended. But it's like the only way to accomplish this short term or maybe long term or difference or special niche use is to grant overall privileges. And I don't mind it going back to Board of Adjustments, but I feel a little uncomfortable, and maybe it's not a huge problem, in creating a certain right and then saying they could come back and what is a site plan modification? And they come back and say, I don't want to use it as an RV park anymore. I want to use it as this, and it's consistent with underlying zoning, and this council would have never approved that underlying, that specific use if that's had what had been presented. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so, Mayor, if I may, the real issue seems to be these older RV lots that have been part of the Homeowners Association that are starting to maybe transition a little bit, not providing that much function directly for the neighborhood. And so maybe there's another way we can tackle the same issue besides this way of doing it with a change in LC zoning. Maybe some other ways within the residential zoning we can allow the special use permit.
Yeah, I would like whatever designation allows that to continue to exist as an RV park. Brings into it certain reviews because opening to the public is different than opening it to the neighbors, and doesn't allow any rights in addition to what it's currently being used for.
I want to make sure that we're clear. We're talking about the RV storage,
not
RV park.
I'm sorry, I misstated. The RV storage. But see, to me, for example, and then this is where I think you have some issues. You have RV storage, which is primarily accessible through internal streets, and now they want to sell it to open it up to general public. How does that impact it if now you're bringing the general public in through these internal streets, whereas we would have never looked at having a commercial building that only has access to internal streets?
Right. And so it would have to be part of the process, and the standards we had set up to allow it to happen would have to address issues like that. And if you couldn't do it by coming directly off the arterial or some way not through the neighborhood, then it wouldn't be allowed.
Or, I want to make sure that we don't set up a situation where we can get over those basic things. Say, okay, well, they're just bringing in RVs for storage, but because they have an LC underlying zoning, that all of a sudden they can change the use from an RV storage to something that complies with LC, and that use may not be anything we would have ever considered, and all they have to do is go back to the Board of Adjustment with a site plan change, and their argument is, I have zoning.
Sure.
Yeah, now this is it's a technical issue. It's not a land use issue.
Yeah. Well, you're right.
I don't feel comfortable with allowing that kind of thing because I think we're going to have a problem with that.
Okay.
What are some of the uses that could be allowed in a limited commercial?
General retail, restaurant, office uses.
Yeah.
I mean, does it get us closer to mixed use?
They're generally
in. Well, that's what we want to. That's where we want
to get.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm saying is that I don't feel comfortable with putting that out without knowing what's going to be there, and only allowing a Board of Adjustment whose level of review is defined by law and is primarily technical an issue, not policy an issue. Is that an accurate way of saying that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that's what I feel uncomfortable with. So however you can bridge that gap.
Okay.
I don't mind them using it as an RV storage. I don't mind them opening up to the general public. If they decide they want to quit doing that, they should have to start the process to change that use to something that involves P&Z and council, I would believe.
Okay.
Okay.
I think I got the direction.
All right.
Okay. Next is tattoo parlors. The proposal is to...
Have we had a problem with these? I haven't noticed that.
I haven't.
Didn't get that memo.
The proposal follows an example that was recently adopted by the City of Phoenix. The basic proposal would, in commercial districts, which are the limited commercial, general commercial, downtown business 1, downtown business 2, and downtown core, they would require a special use permit. In the industrial districts, they would become by right. We would maintain the separation requirements from schools and from other tattoo parlors, which is roughly just under a quarter mile. And we'd also develop a review criteria for the Board of Adjustment for their special use permit process. So these would no longer go to council.
Councilmember Kavanaugh?
Just a question for the City Attorney's Office. To me, this seems to be moving along in a direction that's consistent with the opinion of the court that we're dealing with. Am I correct? This approach wouldn't run afoul of any directives from the court.
Mayor, Councilman Kavanaugh, that's correct. This is not going to be contra to what the Supreme Court ruled, but we are following the Phoenix model.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Let me ask you this. I mean, I think one thing I've looked at is, and I have no idea without knowing the specific things, how it would fit in with the court hearing, but I think one of the issues with tattoo parlors is similar to what we had with massage parlors. Whereas we talked about rules for conducting and guidelines for conducting visits that were objective in nature, I would still, even with tattoo or any kind of these things, see how far we can go. And I get it that the court ruling, because this is free speech thing, I think we've still been able to, with speech and other things, been able to create reasonable guidelines that are objective in nature, that are content neutral. And the thing that I worry about on this is we still have special use, and just distances don't mean that we don't have two really bad business operators 1,201 feet apart. And I think there's a good way to conduct even a tattoo parlor. There's a bad way to conduct that. And I wonder if there's any way we can look at some of those objective standards that we put in with the massage parlors as part of this, as part of the special use permit. They can still be handled at a staff level. They can still be open and not restrictive on speech, but they go to the conduct of business as opposed to what they do, which I think we can do with many other areas and would be consistent with what the court hearing is. Is that possible?
Mayor, you're correct, and that's the intent, to have some objective criteria in which staff, because you're delegating a power, and so we need some objective criteria for staff to follow.
Can you go back? I mean, I think there are things that, unfortunately, with the case that we were dealing with, that were concerns of this council, and one of the problems, and I believe that one of the reasons we had issues, is that they were not spelled out, and therefore we really couldn't put them out and apply them. I think had we done that, we may not have ever been in the situation we were in, because staff could have had more tools to take care of it, other than just zoning rules. You know, if you're zoning and you have a business, there's not a whole lot staff can do because you're in compliance. If there are ways that we can set some standards, and I don't even know what those are without looking back at the massage. If you can maybe look at that and come up with a few things, I'd be interested in seeing if adding some objective standards to a special use permit that staff could take care of that would at least ensure that these businesses meet a minimum standard of the way they conduct business. Is that okay?
Absolutely, Mayor. And just so the record's clear, the court did not invalidate our ordinance.
Right.
This is just some technical correction that we're trying to do to be consistent with Phoenix.
I understand, and I think this is maybe an opportunity to maybe shore up what we're trying to do and accomplish the goals that I think the council was trying to accomplish, which was to ensure that we have high-quality businesses, or at least businesses that meet a certain standard that I think we can define.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. And this is just real quick. I just wanted to show you. This is an overall city zoning map. The areas that are in blue are the industrial areas. The areas that are in pink and in bright red are the areas in bright red are commercial districts. And so roughly speaking, about 8% of the city's land area is involved in commercial and industrial districts. About 5% of that is commercial. About 3% of that is industrial. By delegating this to become by right in industrial districts, we'd be creating a by right circumstance for about 3% of the city's land area, give or take. So we just wanted to give you kind of a, and then this is the downtown zoning map. Most of the downtown area is commercial. Roughly, give or take, about two-thirds is some sort of commercial or mixed use or industrial type of activity. So we'll take a look at that criteria. We'll look at take a look at those objective standards, as well as some of the distance criteria.
Okay.
Some of the design standards that we were proposing. This, real quick, this is may seem a little silly, and it's kind of technical, but right now the ordinance allows people to count half of their alley when they consider a rear yard setback, but it doesn't allow them to use canal banks. So what we're proposing to do is to incorporate canal banks into the same definition as alleys, give them the same benefit for that particular purpose. It would serve, basically what it would do, according to the diagram here, this is the extra 10 feet that a well, it could be 8 feet to 10 feet, depending upon if it's a 16-foot alley or a 20-foot alley. But that extra green area in the back is what they would get in terms of extra buildable area for those lots that back up to those areas. Pretty much the same thing would occur for alleys. You still get the same light and air and separation you would get normally, but it would give people a little bit more, a little bit larger area which to expand and build additions on their property. Any issues with that? I'm sorry, Mr. Richard.
Sorry, I'm just trying to picture a real life situation. But it's only 10 feet, so it's so.
They turned off my mic. So it's not technically.
No comment.
Are we done? It's not the center line of the alley. It's the first 10 feet of the alley.
In alleys that are 16 feet or 20 feet wide, it's to the center line of the alley.
Right.
So it's 8 feet or 10 feet. For canal banks, we're only proposing to use up to 10 feet of that. So we're not if you have an like for example, I think at the upper right picture for canal banks where you have both obviously an open canal and as well as something that's probably like 40 or 50 feet wide, they'd only get 10 feet of that. They wouldn't get 20 feet or 30 feet of that.
Why? Why not let them build on the property line there in that instance?
Basically because we feel it would overwhelm the lot. In a 6,000 square foot lot, typically that's what you have, that back 6,000 and 9,000 square foot lots that back up to this. You're already limited at 50% lot coverage. So by bringing it all the way to the back, in essence, it creates a condition that's a little bit unusual for that lot. There's no back area. There's no open area to open space to go.
Wouldn't you leave the open space between the house and the additional unit, the accessory dwelling unit?
This would allow no.
This is
the setback to the back of the residence.
Oh, to the back. So you're not talking about accessory dwelling units or garages.
No. Those are already allowed to go all the way to the property line.
Okay.
This would allow the back of the residence to encroach a little bit further into the back.
Okay.
That's okay. Balconies and patios into street side setbacks. Right now, the setback along arterial streets is 30 feet. This would allow a 10-foot encroachment for that. Basically, it allows some more interesting massing of the building. It basically tries to loosen up some of the site plan again for multifamily properties. Any thoughts?
And basically move them closer to the street.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the balconies themselves, not the building.
Right. The balconies, the outcroppings, the overhangs, right. Those kind of things.
Exactly.
Okay.
Reduce street side setbacks in industrial districts. The street side setbacks in commercial districts were already reduced from 30 feet to 15 feet with the zoning code update. Quite honestly, we thought we'd extended it to this district or the industrial districts. We hadn't. We think that policy works for this as well. It provides, again, it loosens up the area a little bit. And we provide still the landscaping along the street that we're generally calling for, but it gives the property owner a little bit more land with which to work.
What are you trying to show in these pictures here? What's your illustration?
The basic point, this is the area that's along Stapley. These areas were developed when the standard was at 10 feet, but they actually were developed at 15 feet, so it shows what a 15-foot setback could look like.
This bottom picture?
Both of them, actually.
So the separate one, is it just the fence that's subject to the setback, or?
Well, it's the fence, the parking lot, the building are all. Well,
let's be careful on that, because we don't know if there's an easement running down there. That because on some of our older arterials where we were running utilities down the sides.
Sure.
We have utility easements, and the setback didn't start until actually the end of that that easement on some of those older buildings.
Yeah, normally that's accomplished by the future width line, which is at 65.
I understand that. I say on some of the older arterials. It doesn't, on the new ones, we don't, because we put the utilities usually in the street.
Sure.
Or under the street. It's just some of the other ones.
Okay.
Doesn't happen that much on new ones, but on some of the older roads.
Well, yeah, we'll ask for some help and make sure that we're not creating a condition that's unusable. Okay. Right now, the ordinance will give an ability for a property owner to reduce their minimum parking requirements if they're within 1/8 of a mile of a transit stop. This would be for bus rapid transit or for light rail. We'd like to increase that distance to 1/4 mile. This is consistent with what we did with the form-based code. It's the common definition of a pedestrian walking shed.
I'd like to ask a question. It goes back to Lansing. It has nothing to do with what you're saying, but it is related. On our subdivision, on our landscaping standards, in that 15-foot setback or whatever, we've got to figure out, we've got to quit requiring trees that are going to grow into power lines.
Yes.
We require people to grow 20-foot trees that are underneath 15-foot power lines, and then we have now huge roadways, arterials, where we have the ugliest trees in the world because SRP's gone in there and we have gone in there and cut the living daylights out of trees to keep them out of the power lines. And why we as a city ever required people to put trees that we knew were going to grow into power lines is beyond me. But that's what the landscape standards say. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be something in either our zoning or our landscape standards that says if you're underneath an existing high voltage power line, you're okay if you build a 5-foot bush or a shrub and not a 20-foot tree. So just if we could put that, I don't know where it fits in, but we continue to have that problem.
Okay.
Even with recent builds.
Well, the next one has to do with an unintended consequence of the zoning code update. We updated our single residence standards regarding two-car parking requirements. But unfortunately, they became retroactive to, because of the way it's written, they're technically retroactive to pre-2011 residences. What we'd like to do is to give the authority to the zoning administrator to reduce the requirement on an as-needed basis, basically to use common sense and some judgment on these properties so to determine when it's
required. Are you actually going to put that into the thing, use common sense and just?
Yeah, we'll put it in as a job requirement for the zoning administrator,
please,
which
will
probably take
please
me out
do
of it.
I mean, we all know the situation. Like, you look at that house, and you have a single-car garage, and I've seen it happen where they sell that house. Someone's been using that house for 30 years and doing just fine with a single-car garage in there. And all of a sudden, someone moves in, and they want to change a wall, and we tell them, oh, you're going to have to also add a second-car garage. That's where the common sense and the...
Right.
And we see those situations, especially with parking, and the rationale is always, well, now it's today's standards. This building, and this happens with commercial properties and everything, this building has done just fine for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and now all of a sudden we're going to create huge burdens on property owners who aren't trying to change the use of the property. They just happen to be a new owner, and now there's a gotcha. So yeah, whatever we can do to bridge that gap as part of that common sense and reasonable judgment, I would love.
Okay. And then again, shared parking and alternative compliance plans. Again, rather than right now, it's a special use permit to the Board of Adjustment. We'd like to delegate these to the zoning administrator to do it without public hearing, and then there will be an appeal to the Board of Adjustment if there's a disagreement. Ocotillo plants, and this may address some of your issues, but we'd like to develop a substitute table for ocotillo plants to substitute a certain number of ocotillo plants to replace trees. There are substitute tables for palm trees and saguaro cactus that are in the code now. We don't have one for ocotillo. We'd like to develop one for ocotillo and provide that option to landscape architects. We'd also like to reduce the street side tree ratio. Right now, It's roughly 4 trees per 100. We'd like to reduce it to 2.5 trees per 100 so we can start creating a little bit more visibility into some of these commercial centers. The example you see here has 11 trees. That was actually 12 trees that was required by code. We'd like to reduce that to 6 in this particular circumstance as an example.
Councilman Richens?
Can we just blow up the ratio? Why don't we? I mean, we need to head towards appropriate landscaping, mm-hmm. you know, because there's some places that trees aren't appropriate. And we're jamming trees in a frontage that a tree doesn't belong in for the sake of meeting a ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get more little bit more context based? Because I mean, you know, even when we're in a transit area, we want to put a lot of shade, and we're forcing the wrong tree in these little tree wells, and they don't survive well there either. You know, so I think we need to really. I don't know what the solution is, but I'd like to get away from ratios and get to where we are focusing on planting the right tree in the right spot and give it a place that it can actually survive more than 10 years.
Okay.
I mean, how do we get to that?
We're going to get creative.
Well, and I would agree with Councilman Richens in the sense that we tend to be on ratios, and the reality is that landscaping is the part that gets shortchanged in a development. It's viewed by many developers as, and I don't agree with this, but it's just the way. When you're cutting that check and your project's already at or over budget, putting in landscaping gets shortchanged, and that means we get shortchanged. I don't want to lower standards, but how we apply those standards, I think we can do a better job. And I don't know how you do that and still stay objective, and it would be great if we could apply some common sense standards to things like that without lowering the overall quality standards. But I would agree. We force things sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, if we're trying to provide shade, how you accomplish that shade shouldn't matter as much as, you know, whether it's a man-made structure or a tree or something like that. So, I mean, we got to decide what we're trying to accomplish in front of that, in that particular frontage.
Okay.
Phoenix, to their credit, and I know it's getting late hour, but Phoenix, to their credit, has done a good job with a tree and shade plan. And so I think, you know, if we could shamelessly crib some of the solutions. And we just had talked to Donna DeFrancesco. We just had all of them over here in the Mesa to talk about these issues. I think you attended some of those workshops, so I know that we're kind of on that direction anyway.
So I understand that the council's got the regular meeting in a couple of minutes. Do you want me to come back with the rest of these later, or do you want to?
How many more slides you got?
Probably about 10. Oh, I've got 4? Okay. Well, I've got 10 issues. Let me put it there.
Go for it.
Okay.
Looks good to me. Next
okay.
one.
All right. Okay, some processing revisions. Homeowners associations to vote for single residence setbacks. The way the transition works for the PADs, things like Dobson Ranch or Red Mountain Ranch, the council adopted ordinances that allow things like livable areas to encroach 10 feet into the front or 10 feet into the rear setbacks. However, those are not applicable to PADs because those are planned sites. Their site plans are planned, and their individual lots are planned. The thought would be that instead of having to come back for a major modification of the PAD all the way back through P&Z and to City Council, we would allow the homeowners associations to vote on this through their CC&R process. I'm sorry, conditions, covenants, and restrictions process. And then if that was authorized, then that would become the approval of that instead of coming back through twice on this. We'd let the homeowners decide if they want those options to apply to the HOA. Right now we have, regarding site plan review cases, you can have a site plan review that might, for example, if you were required to get a special use permit and the code might say you need a site plan review, that would be, you would end up going to P&Z and Board of Adjustment. The thought would be that that's a redundant review, that the site plan review can take place on the part of the Board of Adjustment. So we would eliminate the need for that second case. In addition to that, we would propose to set a time limit on site plans at 3 years, with the idea being that if for some reason the site plan wasn't vested within the 3-year time period, it would have to go back through site plan review. This would allow the opportunity that any new changes that might come about in terms of standards that might apply to that site plan would get the chance to be reapplied to that particular site.
And currently it's?
Right now
it's open.
It's open.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
And then similar to the garage issue, we have a building articulation requirements that apply to pre-19 or pre-2011 homes. We'd like the zoning administrator, again, to use that same common sense thing that we were talking about with the parking issue to apply to the building articulation requirements. Same type of thing. A person comes in for a building addition. Code says that they're required to do certain things to the front of their house. Well, that house has been sitting there for 40 years. The addition has nothing to do with this, but yet the code's technically requiring this.
Gotcha.
And then measuring separation requirements. This has to do more with making sure that the distances are, we're measuring the distance consistently, for example, in medical marijuana. If you're trying to keep the medical marijuana dispensary from a church or a school, we measure from the campus of the school to the wall of the medical marijuana facility. We want to make sure that that's codified and that becomes the standard approach to how we measure these separation requirements.
Building wall or outside wall?
Be the outside wall.
What if there's no outside wall?
Well, the outside wall of the building, an enclosed space.
So not the privacy wall, but the building wall.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, well, your little map here thing, the red dots, is that the campus that you're measuring from?
Right. So if, for example, if that particular site was a school, I don't think it is. It just was convenient for the purposes of the illustration. Instead of measuring from the building that's on that lot, we measure from the outside edge of that property.
Campus edge is the property line, basically.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, and some technical revisions. We've got two sections of the code that cover the same thing. We'd like to consolidate them into one regarding detached accessory buildings. Substantial conformance improvement permits has some fuzzy language in it regarding what it can may address. We'd like to make sure it covers some specific things, including foundation-based building separation and drive-through lane standards. The form-based code transit, we've adopted it, but we'd like to formally incorporate it into the zoning code. And to do that, we need to add some base districts to Chapter 3. And there's a typo in regarding the residential small lot districts. It says 2.0, it should say 2.5.
Councilman Kavanaugh? He has a problem with the typo, I think.
Okay.
No, I just kind of food for thought while we're doing this. Could we explore the issue of separation requirements for title loan businesses as we have done with payday loans? Just because I don't believe that title loans were included when we last addressed the other issue, and that's now become a bigger issue for the community to deal with. And so I think it would be helpful at least to raise the issue in the public hearings and discussions.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. No,
thank you.
That's fine.
That's it.
Didn't realize the definition of payday didn't encompass title loans.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we define it. I mean, I guess I thought we had defined it in a non, or I guess we didn't do that, the previous council, in a non.
Yeah, the issue with payday loans is how they were defined by the state. They were called a non-chartered financial institution.
Yeah.
And they were
title loans chartered?
And title loans are not defined the same way by the state.
Okay, so we need to come up with a definition that basically says the same thing, that it can change with the times however best
yes.
we can. Okay. Councilman Richards.
There's a lot of authority going to the zoning administrator. Who's the zoning administrator in the city of Mesa?
Right now, that would be Gordon Sheffield.
And Gordon Sheffield is you.
It's me. Nice.
Now, does Gordon Sheffield have common sense and reason?
Probably not. So fortunately, we can hire someone who does.
Oh, okay. All right.
I am a big Gordon Sheffield fan. I think you do a great job. But we need to really consider this position and who feels it, because there's a lot of authority that's granted to the zoning administrator, yep. and just going forward, and maybe we need to even do a charter amendment, make it a charter officer. It's so important anymore. That's how you're getting. So I mean, it's just getting that.
Well, one thing, and we'll talk about it later, is that there's some zoning administrator things you have in there that are appealed to the Board of Adjustments. I got to think that one through.
Well, and not without getting into a big discussion about it. That's just the standard process for any zoning administrator.
No, I know, but there's, because usually the situations we've had, it works in zoning administrators, have historically been much more limited than what we're doing. We're expanding that, and I'm not sure whether that's the best way to sure. handle an appeal. I'd love for people, if they have a problem with the zoning administrator, be able to get to somebody or something that maybe can solve that. Before going to a Board of Adjustments, which once again is a technical board.
Sure.
And looks at things in a technical nature. And my guess is that when it's coming out of zoning administrator, it's going to be a matter of interpretation and subjectivity.
And it seems like those are different bodies. And I just don't know what the expanded areas that we're having the zoning administrator look at things, that that's the best route. But we can talk about that later.
Okay. That's it.
All righty. Mr. Brady, do you have anything? Oh, we have one other thing. Yes, appointments of boards and committees. You have the memo. I have a motion from Councilmember Richens, a second from the Vice Mayor. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Acknowledge receipts of minutes of boards and committees. Motion from Councilmember Higgins, second Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Mr. Brady, do you have anything to tell us on scheduling?
Just a reminder, we'll have a study session this Thursday, and we'll be sending out we have the budget schedule for the list of all the departments will be coming for every Monday and Thursday between now and the end of May. We'll be beginning those presentations. So you will begin with a budget update, capital improvement programs, and then the operating budgets will come forward. Thanks.
Great. Okay. There's no further business. We have a motion from Councilmember Summers, second Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.